call to order the meeting of the Finance Administration and Oversight Committee. First item on our agenda is approval, is the approval of the agenda. Are there any additions, corrections, modifications to the agenda?
I do have a question, Mr. Chairman, about the agenda.
Yes, sir. Mr. Zimmerman.
There are a number of items here. And the first one's a reimbursable project, but the items B, C, and D, which of those items were discussed with the jurisdictional coordinating committee?
Certainly B has. That's approval of the budget, and we've been engaged with the JCC all year on that.
Okay, fine. How about procurement policy?
That has not been discussed. They'll be discussed today.
And the Metro Access thing, has that been discussed with JCC?
No, that was at the last FAO committee meeting where the request was to have more detailed information of data on Metro Access. That's been discussed.
Okay, but we had a presentation here that has, that they were not in by JCC.
Correct.
That's correct.
Thank you.
Without objection, the agenda is approved as presented. We also have the minutes of May 14, 2009 that are before you. Are there additions, corrections, or modifications to the minutes? Without objection, the minutes of May 14, 2009 are approved as presented. Our first action item is on the Columbia Pike Streetcar Project for Environmental Planning and Preliminary Engineering. Mr. Bodenheim.
Good morning. Thank you very much. We're asking the board today to approve the establishment of a reimbursable project, Columbia Pike Streetcar Environmental Planning and Preliminary Engineering, and we're asking for approval of negotiation for us to negotiate and execute separate reimbursable agreements with Arlington and Fairfax County. Background to this, both Arlington and Fairfax County have separately appropriated funds for this work. Total project is estimated to be about $4 million. The streetcar, as it has been planned over the recent years, next slide, please, is about 5 miles in length, extending from Pentagon City on the east along Columbia Pike to Skyline in the west, and approaching close to, I believe, Northern Virginia Community College there. Next slide, please. The context of this slide just shows some of the streetcar planning in the region as a whole, just to so this, we're thinking about this not as just a one-off project, but as something that there's a larger context for. And in fact, we've communicated with the JCC about this project and talked about the various light rail and streetcar planning projects that are going on in the region. You see the purple line in purple, the north and east extending from College Park to New Calton, sorry, from Bethesda to New Calton. In orange in the district, and in green, you see streetcar, light rail, and bus rapid transit. And then on the west, the Columbia Pike streetcar. The point here is that there's a parallel effort going on at Metro. We are including in our project development program, we proposed to include a study of minimum interoperability standards to assure us that if in future these lines are connected, that we'll have the opportunity for vehicles on one system to run on the others. And so that'll be something that's going on in parallel to this planning and design and environmental work. Next. So as project manager, we're basically bringing project management continuity. We've been doing the conceptual planning for the last couple of years, so we're very familiar with the project, the teams involved, the communities involved. We haven't established expertise in environmental planning and transit design, and we're also bringing the regional transit planning perspective together. So it's something that we're enthusiastic about working on in collaboration with the counties. The project budget is about $4 million, primarily for consultant services and a minor amount to fund project management at Metro. The project history is that the alternatives analysis work was completed in 2005. We've been doing further technical studies for the last couple of years, looking at utilities, right-of-way, funding and delivery options, and coordinating with agencies. And in the next couple of months, we're expected to get a little more detailed on that and to develop a project delivery plan, project funding plan, and preliminary design. So we forward another, yet another slide to the recommendation, which is what we're asking for approval to establish the reimbursable project and to negotiate and execute MOU.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Zimmerman, would you like to move this project?
I do so move.
Second. Project has been moved, and or the proposal has been moved and seconded. Questions?
Yes, I didn't see the Port County.
I'm sorry, that is an oversight. That needs to be added to that slide.
Any other comments or questions? If not, all in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Unanimous. I would like to ask that on the next two items, we act on them together because they are, in fact, interrelated. The approval of the budget includes a plan of contracts, and the plan of contracts only work properly if the changes to the procurement policy are made. So I'd like to ask us to, we could reverse the order, but why don't we just do both of them? And you're going to have to look at both of them in order to have them all work. That we do both before we take a vote. And then we can take the votes individually in a position where you approve one but not the other.
Okay, thank you. Good morning, everybody. This action is to approve the FY 2010 budget. The operating budget, capital budget, and the review of some of the budget policies this board has developed since January when we started the budget process for FY 2010. The operating budget, the original operating budget, which we presented to the board in January, had a $154 million gap. That gap actually has been closed, I can happily say. And it represented some expense reduction that occurred on a management level, as well as in order to, and also to keep the budget subsidy or the subsidy by the jurisdictions neutral for FY 2010, consistent with 2009. There were three main strategies that were used actually to close the budget gap. The management actions, as I said, that we took to control our expenses. We also had some minor adjustments to service levels, draw down on our operating reserve from prior year to close the gap. We had additional subsidy jurisdictions. We also had some additional utilizing some formula funds to fund some preventative maintenance. The next chart you're familiar with is the actual crosswalk chart that we've been using for the last several months that shows the initial gap. It shows the $81 million in the management actions that were taken to close that gap. And then it shows the additional actions that were taken as a result of the committee discussions that we've had since January, which closed the gap further to $29 million. As of March 5th, that was the budget gap then. We went to public hearings. Those public hearings resulted in the board approving $4 million in service adjustments. And the remainder of the gap, as I mentioned earlier, was closed with $12 million in additional subsidies, as well as the $13 million in reserves drawdowns that we're using to close that gap. On the next page, just from a top level approach, 30,000 foot view, we show here the 2009 budget that we currently have and compare it against the 2010 budget that we will be managing to. As you can see, passenger revenue is growing. We expect the growth to be the 3-4% range from year to year. We are managing our cost cutting, and as a result, you can see that our costs, personnel and non-personnel costs, are growing only by a 2% amount. The personnel cost is growing by 3%, actually, which is quite low as a result of managing the overtime that we're doing this year, and we expect to manage that for next year, as well as our hiring practices and our control on our hiring practices. The 3% is a result of, obviously, some pay increases that we're contractually obligated to, and as well as step increases that we're obligated to. But as you can see, the non-personnel expenses are pretty much flat, growing by 1%. And then going down further, the preventative maintenance of $10 million in addition to the 21 that we currently have now. Now that'll grow to $31 million. And then the reserve drawdown of 13. On the next chart, We get to the capital budget. We are in the last year. We will be in the last year of the Metro Matters funding agreement for 2010. The final six-year funded program, the six-year expenditure projects was $2.7 billion. We are on track to spending that. Our final year is next year. The total six-year budget actually is $3.2 billion under the Metro Matters agreement. The difference is the tail expenditures that we will be having in FY11. And that is a commitment that's underneath the Metro Matters agreement. The Metro Matters bonds have been issued, and the first year of that debt service is $21 million. And I might add here, we had actually forecasted a $25 million bond, or $25 million principal payment, and as a result of favorable ratings that we receive from both rating agencies and the help of the jurisdiction's ratings, which are AAA, we were actually to come down on our debt service. And we issued the bonds with a very good rating, which was about a very good interest, actually, which was about 4.6%. In a down market, that's very good. Obviously, we benefited from the jurisdiction's AAA rating status. We were also able to issue the bonds without a debt service reserve fund, which I think is very favorable and have saved us millions of dollars. So that bond, that debt service is actually lower than we had anticipated. For FY11 or FY10, our expected capital budget is $506 million, and that will be totaling, that $506 million totals the six-year expenditure level of 2.7, and that is the expenditure plan under Metro Matters that we will have finally, that's our final plan of Metro Matters. FY11 and beyond, the debt service that you see there is $529 million. Actually, I have that's an error. It should be $508 million. You'll see in your appendix in the detail, the number should be 508. That is the $21 million of debt service that goes out to 24 years. And that is the $520 million, that's a $508 million debt service that we are committed to paying. And the $492 million, as I said before, is the tail expenditures that we expect to have in the new agreement starting in FY11. That'll be subject to the prioritization process on our capital program, which is coming to you on July 9th at the next FAO committee meeting. So the non-Metro Matters program, which also is part of our capital program, these are capital projects that are mostly reimbursable and are separately funded by each one of the jurisdictions. We have a detailed list in here for your view. We are actually now documenting all of these particular reimbursable programs, and we'll have them detailed in our budget book for next year. We'll also have them detailed on, and I referenced this at the last meeting, which would be a website that we're developing that will detail those projects out, as well as all the other capital projects. But as you can see here, by jurisdiction, you have the level of capital projects that that refer to that, the $28 million in D.C., Maryland, and Virginia. And these are just some of the examples listed here of the projects. In addition, we also have, as a part of this, the $202 million ARRA grants, which are part of this program as well. On the next chart, just to talk about the budget policies that...
Hold back just for a minute.
Sure.
Because I could make the...
Mr. Graham.
I just want a very tiny item. Is that we have the District of Columbia has not authorized any additional DC circulator buses relating to the Georgetown Blue Bus. But can you keep that in mind? I would appreciate it.
Okay. Yes.
We have in the reimbursable projects, we have a forecast. I don't know what the word forecast means. DC circulator buses, we have a forecast.
Agreed.
That relates to this issue, if you would just keep it in mind.
Yes, your point's
correct.
We need
further approvals before any funds expended for that specific purpose.
That's correct. And all the reimbursable projects we come forward to the committee for review prior to them being approved. That's correct. On our budget policy, When the budget was initially proposed in January, we outlined a number of policy matters for the board to consider. And as you can see on this slide, these are a result of some of the things that were done. Later on today, in the next presentation, Christian Kent will take you through the Metro Access Program, where some of the discussions were on looking at the ADA guidelines and trying to align them with some of our growing expenditures. So I'll leave him to talk through that process. The board considered and decided on issues relating to the need for service reductions, and that occurred. We also actually, the board agreed to fund the health retirement by $1 million, the unfunded health unfunded liability in regards to health care, retiree health care. And as a result, that was funded as a board decision. This is actually very critical, and the discussions that we have had with the rating agencies, they were very pleased that this actually was finally a program that was put in place by the board. And finally, the board has opted to draw down on the reserves, the operating reserves for 2010, or the prior operating reserves, with the position that the reserves that we have for this year be replenished by that. Additional budget actions. In this resolution that we're providing you today for approval for the FY 2010 budget, we've added a few other items, which they're housekeeping matters, if you will. One is the jurisdictional agreement on all of these, and there's no additional subsidy impact. Reimbursable bus route, nicknamed George, will be operated by ART, the Arlington bus provider. Some routes in Fairfax will be operated by the Fairfax connector. And finally, there's some minor rerouting changes relative to the NH bus going to National Harbor. They've all been approved prior to this, and they've all been discussed at the public hearing, and there's no budget impact to those items. Also included in the resolution, which is not on this chart, is actually an approval to add an additional bank under our line of credit. In the prior resolutions that the board approved on the existing line of credit to expand the capacity, we actually highlighted four banks specifically by name. We actually would like to add one additional bank who is interested in participating in our line, so we've had that in the resolution as well. Next steps. We'd like the board to approve the resolution for the FY 2010 budget. July 1st is the beginning of our fiscal year, and we'd like to continue operations, and obviously we request the board to approve the budget.
And I'd like to request that we not move this at this moment, do the next presentation and then move it. Are there any questions on the budget or on the recommendations that staff has, Mr. Zimmerman?
A couple of things. Go back to page 2, crosswalk.
Yes.
Tracks how we went from 154 balance. Can you remind me what is contained in other management actions early on?
In total, that was the $81 million that we took. And of that, there was 313 positions. There was also the reduced overtime, and there was also the other management items were at some administrative, non-personnel costs. There were some fuel reductions that we had as a result of swaps that we put in place that actually reduced or locked in our fuel budget at a lower rate than we had originally actually included in the budget. And there's other items.
That's a good description.
Travel and expenses we also reduced. So. That actually were the biggest items that included that $35
million. $35
million. Right.
It's part of the 81.
Well, our fuel actually is we consume about a million of diesel gallons of diesel fuel a month. And because when we did the budget originally, we had a high dollar amount for fuel. And during the time we were doing the budget, we were able to actually lock in a fuel rate of, I think it was $1.50 a gallon. So we actually locked in. And we hedged half of our fuel budget for next year. And as a result of that, that was a considerable amount of that $35 million.
Okay. It's a grab bag of all kinds of things, some of which might be permanent savings, and some of which are essentially transitory in nature. Fuel saving, for instance, was obviously an opportunity to seize upon. You can lock it in, though, for the next 3 years.
18 months.
If we look at... let me set the overall. Of the $154 million, how much of that is one-time item or deferrals? So items that essentially you're going to have to pay.
They're all baseline budget cuts. There really isn't any order of magnitude one-time only kind of budget things here. These are...
Sorry, not correct.
Yeah, let me answer it this way. If you're asking the question in terms of the FY11, you know, challenge that we have, and we have presented this committee with a very large order of magnitude on what that was at a March or April committee when we were knee-deep in the budget approval for this year, for this next year. The order of magnitude that we laid out, given the fact that a lot of our costs are fixed, was about $130 million. So if you're asking about the challenge that we have for 11, it's going to be in that order of magnitude, because a lot of those costs are labor costs that are fixed costs.
Which order of magnitude?
$130 million.
Well, let's hold that thought. But I do think it's important to note a substantial portion of what we have is the bills that we still have to come back and pay. We get things like the deferral on GASB 45, which I believe is an appropriate action to take. That, nonetheless, is still being deferred. If you look at the spreading out of pension costs, last line, and an appropriate action to take. But the bill is going to, the bill is higher next year and the year after that because of that action. If you look at the movement of the preventive maintenance fund, that's a bill that's being put off. Something that didn't have to be fixed today, that will have to be fixed tomorrow. If you look at the last with reserve drawdown, I believe there's a substantial portion of the $754 million action that we're still going to have to pay that bill. And much of it we're going to confront 6 months from now when we bring back to the president. On the other side of things, we talk about $140 million magnitude.
Yes.
We have the question on revenue. And I note on the next page that the passenger revenue growth is assumed at 4%. I believe that your most recent data for the year shows us about 1%. So, on a calendar year basis, we so far aren't hitting a number consistent with that budget.
The budget's a little bit aggressive, but I think it's achievable on ridership forecast.
I certainly would expect you to think so, or you wouldn't be able to recommend or approve it. But I think it's important to note that we're depending upon a number of assumptions and things on the optimistic side.
That's true.
As you said, a bit aggressive. Then we have things like paper transfer, which, again, we're making a more, it may all work out, but we're making a more optimistic assumption about. And on the cost side, which depends on savings for things that come back to us and have to do next year. It is very important, I believe, that we very quickly get a picture and monitor it closely, starting now, about what we think next year's overall budget magnitude looks like. And for the discussion that we had at the last board meeting, we need to get a sense of, in the broadest terms, what happens just based on existing board policy. We have a board policy that would say there's going to be a fair adjustment next year, and the policy suggests the basis of that would be. And without knowing anything about what the fare structure is going to be, you can certainly get an estimate of, based on potentially cost CPI or something like that, say fares should be expected to grow more or less by this, given our best guess on ridership and all that, we should get this much more revenue. You can get a sense of how that figures into it. Figures like the 130 that you've been talking about, what does that picture look like? I'll bet you're already thinking about it.
Yes, this is definitely in the general manager, and I've had this discussion. This is a stretched budget, and we know that this is going to be a challenge. So we have actually put in place, and already this year, the last 6 months, overtime is down. We're rolling into this end of this year with a surplus potentially of $13 to $15 million because of the actions that we've put in place. We are already thinking about the revenue picture as well, and the board, I'll remind the board that the policy or the resolution that you have passed is on increases of fare, is based upon, as you say, the commercial price index, whatever it is at the year, and it's double, thank you, and it's double that. So if you look at the CPI, it's at 3%, double would be 6%. So on an order of magnitude, if the board decided to go to make that call, then that would be a 5 to 6% increase in fares. And just from an order of magnitude, that could be $30 to $35 million. I mean, off the top of my head, these are things that we are already thinking about. So yes, we are looking at cost, and we also are trying to understand the revenue picture as well.
One last question. I didn't see any reference in here or any maybe missing it. Revenues from advertising and new advertising initiatives?
Yes.
Is there a place where they're shown specifically?
They're rolled up. We're on a next year actually will be the last year of our advertising existing contract that we have, which guarantees us a minimum base. So we're in the process currently of renegotiating that advertising agreement.
I'm sorry. What I was referring to was a couple of years ago when we adopted a set of new advertising initiatives and new revenue.
Yes.
The board also decided that money would be used specifically to fund improvements in the quality of customer service.
Yes.
First thing we chose to do was to deal with the trash cans in the metro station, but there were other things we wanted to do. I would like to see, if it's not available now, but before we adopt the budget, the layout of how that money, which is earmarked for that purpose, is being allocated, what customers are getting for it.
It's $3 million.
Yeah, we have that. The revenue is
around. The plan for spending it, how that plays.
It's absolutely.
Thank you.
Mr. Gray.
Thank you. Since we're in the general observation category now, I just want to observe that on the budget crosswalk page, go back to that. Find service changes $4 million. Whether the people of the media got that. But I think it would be very interesting for next year's budget process if the media staff at Metro WMATA would assemble for us the clipping that ran this past year, starting in January, and all of the stories that agitated so many people. By the way, so many people contacted me and you, I know as well, about that the sky was falling at Metro and that we were closing the system at 9 p.m. and that fares were going to increase by this and that and the other thing. And we end up with this. Now, this may be a stretch budget, but it is a balanced budget. And I think as we approach next year's budget process, I hope we can find ways that we don't have to, at least not early and often, agitate our riders, our consumers of our services, the way in which we did this past year. And having experienced article after article, news report after news report, about service reductions and everything, and all of the other great modifications we were going to make in the quality of our services, then to end up with this, you know, which is a direct result of all of our jurisdictions working together and coming up with what I believe and what the District of Columbia believes is a responsible plan of action in terms of this budget. But I just hope that we don't have to go through looking ahead and as a way of a general observation for next year. The type of agitation, unnecessary agitation, that we went through this past year. And, you know, and I hope that, I mean, I don't have a crystal ball. No member of this board has a crystal ball. I don't know where we're going to end up. I don't know what budget actions we're going to have. I don't know what impacts it's all going to have. I think we should have good planning. But at the same time, let's avoid a calendar year 09 media circus that we had this past year.
I'd just like to note for staff that there were two board requests, one from Mr. Zimmerman and one from Mr. Graham. I hope you will note those down and respond to the committee. And Mr. Linton, you want to comment?
Well, I just want to say I hear Mr. Graham. I also know that we're driving the need for voter transparency quite a bit. The government is something that we've been admired by regarding day and night time here. We need for the public to know where it's. I also know that this board, as stated by Mr. Zimmerman, has put in place a policy that reflect board decision on how to vote for it. I also know that this board just passed a budget that was also indicated by Mr. Zimmerman that, yes, we might have skated through by doing it, but it's based upon a whole number of assumptions that could, in fact, end up in our laps. To make sure that we don't end up in an extreme budget process where we're having meetings, canceling meetings, making decisions at the last moment, looking like a board that doesn't know what it's doing, I would hope that in the spirit of transparency, that we will start talking about our policies, our direction, our environment, so that everyone involved in the process, both the constituencies that pay the freight of the fair, the ones that pay the taxes, and the jurisdictions have a chance to have a view of where the future lies. So that would be somewhat a safer government suggestion that I would like to do.
I'd like to request that we not repeat the discussion that we had at the last board meeting, with everybody just weighing in on the same issue again. Ms. Hutchins.
Well, I think the item that's before us is really to move this to the Board of Directors for approval. Is that correct? Is that where?
That's correct.
And we're going to get to that as the overall piece. And I really do think that while the discussion has been helpful, I think the next piece after adopting the two items here really is to talk about how do we get to next year. I think Mr. Zimmerman and others have talked about what the current budget that we're looking at is going to, how it's going to position us in 2011. But the more important part is how are we going to perform in 2011. And the most important part to me is really the fact that we must walk through this and try and clarify what do all of these numbers mean should be a signal to us that something is missing in the transparency of our budget. And it is not just for us, it's for our customers. And so I'm anxious to get to the discussion of when we're going to talk about process, because the process is going to be critical to us. And I would hope that we've learned a lot from the last time, and it does not have to be a show that we do, but really a clear process that our customers will be part and parcel to, but also that we are really articulating what we think are good policies in terms of the long-term stability of the authority, not just budget of 2010 without recognizing that the 2011 budget is going to be poised by what we do in the 2010 budget. So I hope that as we move forward, the questions and clarifications are great here, but the deed has been done in essence for 2010, and that we need to think about what the impact will be so that we can poise ourselves for a process that hopefully will guide us a little bit more directly as to what are the true fiscal consequences of our actions and publicly acknowledge what those consequences are, and the party, the customers and public are clearly involved in that process. And that is, I think this is a good budget in terms of being able to say to the public they have service deliveries that were avoided, but I think it needs to be said that the cost of what the avoidance is and how do we deal with it.
Thank you, Mr. Hutchins. I'd like to comment there are two policy issues that were not highlighted here, one of which we talked about, but we haven't put down anywhere, and I'm not saying that we need to put it down except maybe in the minutes, and that is what people have just alluded to, which is how are we going to do the next budget? And again, one of the things that I at least have been pushing for is that in September we settle on budget guidance, that there be a proposal from the staff that there be an action by the board that says this is the guidance under which the general manager will develop a proposed budget, that that budget be presented in December, so that we have at that point an idea as to what it is we're dealing with, that it be published in detail in January, that that provide a review and a detailed review by the staffs of all the jurisdictions, and that the staff at Metro work with them on those reviews, and that we then will have that period from January to June to do this whole process in a very deliberative and detailed process. I did not intend it as a motion. If the committee would like it to be a motion, that's fine. Mr. Zimmerman.
Motion now or not, I think making that part of the direction for the action, I think that should be formally part of the direction. Point that I was trying to make in the first place, that I'm not sure is entirely clear. My concern, the link between you, the danger of our situation right now, I believe we are exactly the situation. And I don't believe that if anyone draws the conclusion we were earlier invited to draw, oh, what's the problem? We only had 4 million. See, there was really no problem. I think the Alfred E. Newman approach to this is disaster. Because if we don't have either more revenue in the box, more subsidy from the jurisdiction, costs inevitably rise, and that means you're either going to cut service in significant ways, or you take one-time, non-repeatable action, draw down assets. We don't have very much of that left to do. So if we were having a great year coming next year, it wouldn't matter. It would have been fine. It's gate through. But we all know that it's not a one-year thing. This is at least a two-year thing. It might get better after that. But we know to a moral certainty that this coming year for governments in this area and WMATA is not a whole lot better and could be worse than the last one. Which means that if we want to avoid having the situation that Mr. Graham is so concerned about, at the very least, we need to be telling those who fund us that they can't hold subsidies flat again. We need to go to them and tell them we need more subsidy. If the subsidy doesn't grow, we're going to have exactly this conversation. And there's just no way around that. Or they may say, no, raise fares. But we're going to have objection here to raising fare at least beyond what we've already said we're going to do. And that'll be the same kind of conversation. If you don't want to be choosing between a massive fare increase and cuts in services, you have to get more subsidy from the participating jurisdiction. And we need them to understand that very soon because they begin preparing their budgets. By the time we're doing our budget process, it's already too late. And so I agree completely with what Mr. Benjamin is saying because it's essentially do it, but we have to even start sooner than that. We need people in the legislatures to understand in July that we have a budget problem that is going to lead to the same kind of discussion. I think that you're going to be able to skate through like this and you've only got $4 million in service changes. By the way, those 313 positions are not service neutral. It is going to be an effect on service. People are going to be complaining about things 6 months from now because of what we had to do this year. You're not going to be in that. You need to be explicit and frank about that from day one of this meeting.
Okay. I just want to say I'm not going to respond. Because this is just, you know, Mr. Zimmerman.
I think you're responding,
on,
Mr. Graham.
On, and you know, and we can continue to do this. You have done this at the last board meeting. You've done it twice today. For those of us who are a contrary point of view, it's problematic. And you know, this is going to be the future of our budget discussion, starting in is it June? You know, we're just about to approve 1 year's budget, and this is what we're going to have. This is not going to be a conversation that is going to be contributing.
Now,
I think there's going to be a time for all of this to happen, and there's a time for us to look at all of our various options, and it's not now.
Mr. Graham, if you and Mr. Zimmerman can have this conversation at another time, because we've all heard it once,
right.
If we can have it some other time,
once
it would be fine.
Enough.
I do think that we are going to have a significant problem with the next budget, and we do need to have thoughtful process for going through it, and that's why I suggested the schedule that is accelerated a little bit over last year and certainly gives us guidance early on so that we know what our issues are. But we don't want to get into a situation where we have partial budgets, we have only PowerPoint presentations that we're working from, and where we don't have the depth that we need in order to carry out our fiduciary responsibility as board members. So I think it's important for the process to start as early as possible. Mr. Cato.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We do intend to start it as early as possible. I just want to make sure there's an understanding. We will put together a budget, but the degree of detail will not be as detailed as it would be if we had one more month. We're going to put the time in, but it's already mid-June. In August, we're dark. We would do the work, but I just had some concerns about the detail. And we will work as hard as we can, and this board directs it. We're bringing you back a budget in December, but we are cutting a month out of the development process.
And that's why I very distinctly said a presentation in December and a detailed budget in January.
Okay. That works. That works.
So what you have is, in December, you give us the equivalent to what you did last year. But by January, we have a detailed budget that we can look at and that our staffs can look at and can work with your budget staff to review. The other item that is in this resolution and wasn't highlighted is the next item that we have to discuss, and that is an extremely extensive plan of contracts, which ties together with a change in our procurement policy. So I think it's important for us to review this procurement policy because it relates very closely to whether we want to approve this plan of contracts. So I'm asking that we now go on to the next item, review that. If we can decide on both of those, we come back and take our actions. That is a significant policy item.
Thank you. This this actually is a the plan of contracts, let me just make clear, is actually a plan of contracts. It's part of the budget process where Metro provides a detailed list of plans of contracts that we intend to let that has an estimate on budget capacity and an estimate on the nature of the contract. It's purely an estimate. And then these are provided as part of the budget resolution, and they're approved by the board. The difference here is that we are asking to streamline our procurement process, and this is why, as Mr. Benjamin indicated, this is a change from our current guidelines and procurement policies. The objective actually is to provide the general manager with higher thresholds in the procurement process, consistent with the guidelines actually that the board has provided us with the stimulus funds in order to execute on a timely basis and letting capital projects, letting contracts out. The goal here for Metro is to create more efficiencies in our procurement process, to be more transparent, to be more accountable, to be more efficient, to have, because of the fact that we have limited resources, we're looking to use technology more in order to sort of put together our procurement linkages between our financial systems and our procurement, and we are doing that. We also have better oversight. The board in the last few years has created the Office of the Inspector General, and as a result, we have, in practice, seen more oversight on our contracts, which is good. We also have a lot of oversight from our from the FTA, which provides oversight on an annual basis of all of our procurement policies and systems and processes and contracts. So there is the controls that are still in place. We are not recommending those control changes at all. We're just actually recommending a higher delegation level to the general manager. The initiatives that the board has already approved in prior streamlining initiatives that have been done in 2007 are listed here. enhanced use of purchase cards, which we actually have done. We also have, the general manager has had the ability to procure basic operational goods and services without a ceiling in order to keep the keep us as a going concern. There's been some increased board thresholds for contract actions already that the board has approved. And then, as I mentioned before, we have audit thresholds that are existing under the office of the IG. The recommended initiatives on the next chart give you a view of what currently the current level of authorization is and the recommended level that we are requesting. As I indicated, the streamlining measures are not to compromise our accountability and oversight, but to add to it. The staff and accountability will increase, not decrease, our view. The objective is accomplished through the use of the plan of contract that provides a level of specificity to the board as well as to the public so that they can actually view what contracts are being teed up for participation from any local contractors, from DBE, minority vendors, things like that. So this plan of contracts is, we're looking to model this after the existing plan of contracts that we have in place under the stimulus program, that of which that you've already provided the general manager authority to initiate. So we are asking for that same authority for the general manager. On the right-hand column, can you go back to that other chart? As you can see, new contracts initiated and award current levels is $1 million on plan of contracts as part of the annual budget process. We are looking to submit this plan of contracts as the approval that gives us the authority to initiate. And just as a side note, the plan of contracts that we actually mailed out is probably 2 or 3 pages long. I think it's 3 pages. And it has the list of contracts that we let on an annual basis. This is just regular operating business that we do in order to keep the concern going. So this is not, these are not new and interesting contracts. These are just regular contracts that we do. There's probably maybe a half a dozen or so contracts that are in that plan of contracts that supersede the existing $1 million cap. So they're not a lot. They're a few handful. And I just wanted to make that point to the board. The sole source, there are, again, the plan of contracts is an estimate. There are some in the plan of contracts that look like they may be a sole source. That's just our procurement department's estimate. They may not, but again, this is a, even though it is a sole source or it could be a sole source, we would still follow our internal procedures that are put in place in order to abide by the sole source requirements and our legal counsel actually reviews these in detail as well as our inspector general before we proceed. Modifications, again, we have a cap on modifications. We're asking for the ability, if the bids come in higher than anticipated under the plan of contracts, as long as there is budget approval that you will have already approved, that we would be able to move forward on that. And then the last part is awards that exceed the amount. Same type of thing. If the plan of contracts is for $1 million contract and the contract comes in at $1.5 million, that we would be able to proceed contingent upon the fact that we would have budget funding available for that contract. So that actually is just a short view of what it looks like. The again, the recommended initiatives by request is to have the general manager the authority to initiate and award all contracts, including sole source, of any value, to grant the general manager the ability that we currently have to increase the ceiling or actually remove the ceiling on contracts, and also to grant the general manager the ability to include modifications subject to budget availability. I think a couple of points bear mentioning. I have Ray Griswold here, who's our director of procurement, and we can answer any questions that you have. But I do believe that the plan of contract, as we have gone down the road with the stimulus, is encouraging us to be transparent and be more accountable, and that is actually the goal. The plan of contracts will be published in the budget book. We are only presenting the operating plan of contracts to you currently, and although we have a capital budget for the committee to approve in the $500 million range for next year, we will actually be providing the capital plan of contracts in September. That plan of contracts is actually not quite ready for your view. So we will be coming back to the board in September to show you the plan of contracts on capital. And that is the request and the recommendation. The last slide shows the request. And we'll be happy to answer any questions that you have.
Are there any questions? I would note the one area that I have really substantial concern in is sole source contracts. At present, that limit is $100,000. By this, combined with the list that you put together, you're raising it to $15 million for contracts that are shown here. And the idea that we could be awarding $15 million contracts without the board at least reviewing it and knowing that it's going out and saying, yeah, that looks okay to us, even with all the procedures that we have in place, seems to me to be a very, very large jump. I would feel a lot more comfortable if the board were to see sole source contracts above a given limit, regardless of whether it's in the set, because we don't even know which one of these might be a sole source contract. And that provides an enormous amount of opportunity for a potential problem, because when you have multiple bids, at least you have something you can look at and say, all right, I know what I got with multiple bids. And it's sole source, although there's all sorts of documentation that goes with it, it's one of those things that can be more easily criticized, and I would like to see the board involved in it. If we want to change the threshold, that I can see. 100,000 is a pretty low threshold. But all of these contracts, any one of them, could be a sole source, and you're saying any or all of them should be awarded without board involvement, unless I'm reading this wrong.
So that's correct, actually, and it goes to the efficiency and streamlining. But to your point, we can provide, we will provide on a monthly basis the transparency and accountability on the contracts that we let and report them on a monthly basis to the board so that you have actually familiarity and the information that you require. But allowing us to move forward on contracts, even if they be sole source, I believe actually we have the internal controls and processes to abide by, and I have Ray here who can vouch for that. I understand your concern, but in order to get the benefit for moving quickly on contracts, it takes us our cycle time on contracts, to be perfectly honest with you, when I got here 9 months ago, and is still that way, is extremely long and arduous. Now, we do actually, and as a result, we maybe have some missed opportunities. There might not be some advantages or efficiencies that were able to be put in place. And as a result, we may spend more dollars than we should as a result of the fact that we have very long turnaround times for contracts. That said, I'm not implying that the board is delaying that at all. That's not my implication. It's just that we're looking for actually that ability to sort of let as quickly as we can. But
Mr. Linton and then Mr. McKay.
Mr. Chairman, I think you know there is a real case for us wanting, you know, the board, the staff want to have an opportunity for some efficiency in contracts. We recognize our staff limitations, and we all applaud efficiency. And I don't think that's question. I think the board would like to work towards that end, and I think some of the suggestions here get us there. However, let me just say that what percentage of our contracts are sole source?
Very small.
I don't know. I would say that it's probably less than 10%.
Let me just give you an order of magnitude. We probably have about 10,000. Well, we have 10,000 purchase orders that we on a yearly basis, of which probably 250 are contracts. So 250 are contracts, just to give an order of magnitude of what we typically let. And of those 250 contracts, a very small percentage are sole source.
Let me put this in perspective. If you look at, go ahead.
I think that point is the point I did. So if the other parts of this were to move forward and some separate kind of process was applied to the sole source, so that some of the comfort level that the board would want, the significant point of the efficiency that you're seeking, you have got, correct?
Yes.
Which means that, you know, 95% of contracts under the scheme that you sent before us will move forward with some process in place. What it may mean, though, is that a very small percentage, that 5%, 7%, would need some other kind of scrutiny put in place to satisfy some of the concerns that some of them reported. So I'm just saying, I think that's, that is something that might get us to a point.
Thank you. I absolutely agree. I like the streamlined approach, and I think it makes sense. I guess my question is just to drill down on your comment a little bit further. Of the sole source contracts, of that 10%, how many of them are over $1 million? Do we have any idea?
I would have to say that it's I see sole sources that are usually under $1 million, so I would say it's a fairly small amount that's over $1 million, maybe 10% of that. If you look at this list, it has 133 items on it. I looked at those contracts that are under $100,000, and there's six of them that are recommended as sole source. That doesn't mean they will end up as sole source, but there are two on here that are over $1 million that are sole source, and there's six that are under $100,000 that are sole source. So it's a small number.
Right. Based on that, I would personally be comfortable suggesting that we set $1 million threshold, and that any sole source contract over that amount come to the board and approve the rest of the package, but put that parameter on the sole source if that's to the chairman's liking. I certainly would be a lot more comfortable with that, knowing that a sole source contract of that value or more would be coming to us if it's only a handful of them anyway.
Ms. Hutchins?
I just had a question in terms of developing the plan of contracts and the items that are part of that. Have we at all worked with the IG in terms of looking at this process? The question raised is that we are making a shift, and it is a shift that we would hope would be consistent in the kind of efficiencies we want to go and streamline, but to make sure that we're clear that we're probably in good shape in terms of how they would pass the IG scrutiny.
IG has joined us at the table.
My understanding is that we're going to still keep the current process of the IG. Currently, the IG looks at all sole source procurements to make sure the price that we have is adequately supported, and they're just not stringing us dry on it. So we do take a look at that, and that process will continue.
So we would be looking at, for example, the sole source piece. And overall, as the plan comes together, all of those processes are under the same scrutiny of the IG.
Yes, the
justification.
That's right. Yes, we make sure that they're just not pulling the labor costs and what out of the air. We're asking for support.
I think the question that Mr. Linton was different was asking was different. Yeah, we understand you look at whether the price is reasonable and supported. The question I believe he was asking was the policy question of, was there adequate justification that this truly had to be a sole source contract? Do you review that?
No, we have not been doing that. We do ask the documentation they give us. They do tell us why they're going to sole source, but we're not making a judgment to say that adequate or not.
Our legal, actually, counsel does that particular justification, not the Office of the Inspector General.
Well, let me make a suggestion at least. I don't disagree necessarily with Mr. McKay's proposal, but what I would suggest we do is get to understand this just a little bit better before we grant this authority at whatever level we do it. And I'm not sure we have time to get into that right now. I would suggest that we pass this not including the sole source provision, and that we ask staff to come back and discuss that sole source provision with us some more in terms of the controls that are applied, how they would be applied, whether different thresholds would be appropriate, how many contracts would be involved, because I do think that this is a highly sensitive area, and just sort of throwing it out in the middle of a whole bunch of other changes, all the rest of which I feel reasonably comfortable with, does leave me feeling very nervous. So would anybody mind if we...
Yeah, can I just ask a question?
All right.
Do we have any concerns to date about the use of the sole source provisions? I mean, have we had reason for concern, egregious violations of the procedures that have been in place?
I think one of the issues, at least from my point of view, is that the sole source provisions have been very good, and this has been part of it, the fact that the board sees those, which causes staff to be that much more careful about what they do. And we take partial responsibility when these, when the public sees that a sole source has gone out. I can understand changing the threshold. I can understand all the other issues that are here. I think one of the things that's wonderful about this agency is that we built an entire rail system. We've spent billions and billions and billions of dollars with not even a hint of fraud or corruption. I sure would like to keep it that way.
Right, but this is one case where I think Mr. McKay actually has a very good compromise suggestion. To allow the staff, to allow the general manager and the staff the flexibility, but not unlimited flexibility, capping it at a, in my mind, a reasonable threshold of $1 million. So I'd have a problem if we were given the general manager and his team unlimited sole source authority. But I think what Mr. McKay offered was a great compromise to make sure that we still have the checks and balances. You know, I don't know that giving the staff $1 million threshold would increase or decrease the risk of fraud or waste or abuse. And we have a great inspector general and team here from all the reports that I've read who are constantly paying attention to the procedures and actions of the staff. So while I think I don't want us to spend more time trying to find the perfect solution, I love to give this team the opportunity to move quickly, setting some parameters, and I think having $1 million threshold, it's you know, works for me.
Ms. Hewlett.
Yes, well, to dovetail on Mr. Linton's issue, when he asked the question about your review, it was, you mentioned price and that the general counsel looks at the criteria, you know, the justification for the need for the sole source. And that's always an issue in many organizations and many public entities, and it's something you have to be very, very careful about. And though we may not have had any problems here, thankfully, and we'd like to keep it that way, I think it's, you know, worth looking at. Again, and the second part of this is, you know, you talk about this as, you know, the team here, it's a great team, but it's not always going to be applicable to this team. The team's going to change, and so all of us are going to change. So that's a factor as well. So it is no reflection on this team. And the third thing I would say is there a time constraint on looking at this issue alone? If we were to remove this from the equation today, does that hamper you in any way?
No, we would be able to proceed at just like the capital contracts, plan of contracts. You would not see that until September, but we actually have coverage between now and September for contracts that we need to let on the capital. So we could move this aside, but let me just say that we do have the Inspector General's review, and it's not just the team, and I appreciate that comment, but we do have processes that are in place that are solid, from the contracting officer to the Office of the Inspector General to the General Counsel to the AGM level. Those are all looking at the criteria on a sole source, and we have to make sure that we're not just checking the box, but we're making sure that they're valid criteria, and that's the process.
Do we have established criteria? I mean, is it something that we see that the board...
Now, what the board actually sees, if I may, when we bring these items to the board, they're really as administrative items at the board, and sometimes they're approved en masse, and sometimes they're not, and there's some discussion. I mean, it changes.
I guess I'd like to see...
I really am concerned about the statement that you just made, because we just heard from the IG that her review was strictly on cost.
Right.
And I know from past experience that the review that the general counsel does doesn't go beyond, are the statements legal and adequate?
That's correct.
It doesn't look behind it to say, and is it possible that they didn't really do what they should have done? So we don't have an in-depth review as to whether or not a the sole source contract is fully justified. Now, I agree, the board doesn't do it either, but there's a tendency for these issues to get raised when it does tend to come to the board.
Well, I get
really, really concerned.
Our contracting officers are required to actually make that determination. So, and that is, we get reviewed on an annual basis by the FTA, as well as we get reviewed, actually the Inspector General just reviewed our purchase card and is in process of reviewing that. I think it's completed, and I don't want to supersede anything that you might say, but I think we've passed that review with flying colors. So I would argue that those requirements are very stringent on the contracting officer level.
Okay. I guess my reaction is, I sort of like the proposal that Mr. McKay has made, but I'm not sure that $1 million is the right number, or 500, or 2 million. And I sure would like to understand it better, and I feel like it's just being jammed through right now. And I'd like to spend some more time on it. Mr. Lynn?
Jim, I think one, we're arguing over, I don't know, 5% of this proposal. And we're spending a lot of time on doing that. Two, I don't think you may, in fact, get what you need if you come back with the justification and the information that you just provided to the point that the board is comfortable with Mr. McKay's suggestion. So the suggestion that Mr. McKay made, which Mr. Albert also supported, could in fact be the end of the day. So what we're just suggesting is step back, take what you got, move forward with that, come back with the kind of pieces in place to say, this is what you have for assurance that it gets to some of the board's needs, then you can get 100%. Can I suggest that?
Ms. Hutchins?
I would just like to articulate this way, that you started to justify, and at least on my part, provide some comfort of what the process consists of. And you talked about this as in a transparency, not just for the organization and efficiency, but you also said for the public. And I think it's really good for people to know what process you have gone through each time you are looking at a contract, that we would then know it's going to be either got one given to the general manager to approve or come to us. And I think you can, half of this discussion will go away, at least on my part, if that is clearly spelled out so we can see it, and it will be seen as the approval process, and we recognize that. So I think it's just documentation that needs to be much more graphic.
Well, let me suggest that we at this point move this item, and then we go back and do the budget immediately after that. And I would suggest that in moving this item, we eliminate the item on sole source and ask the board to come back specifically to deal with that, and then we will decide what changes we may want to make to sole source based upon more information. Is that okay with the... Approve these, these changes to the procurement manual, not including the proposal on sole source. Mr. Zimmer.
Why our staff only saw it in the last
Well, to be perfectly honest, I didn't know that that was a requirement for this topic, so I apologize if I went out of protocol, but I don't know.
What I would say, Mr. Chairman, we have a company who is changing policy in a significant way and is highly technical and extends outside the area that the board normally works. That's precisely the kind of situation in which many of us tend to look at our staff who know more about these things and can tell us, how does this compare with what we do in our jurisdiction? So it's not a big deal, or is it really different? Well, I have to understand why something different is justifiable anyway. I don't feel like I'm prepared. Even before I heard of all the questions that you very sensibly raised on the table, I wouldn't be prepared to vote for or against it. I'll have to explain that. I just don't feel like I have enough.
Any further?
I would like it reviewed, at least in my case, I've had others, but by professional staff who work with these things, or who can give me a better perspective on whether the kind of things, you know, this sounds reasonable, that sounds reasonable, I'd like a little more perspective on something that is, frankly, a highly technical matter. For the most part, as a policy board member here and where else I serve, I'm kept at arm's length from, and that's what's uncomfortable about procurement. We are appropriately kept at arm's length from a lot of this, which is the reason why we have a long track record, not only here at WMATA, but the governments we serve, of not having those kind of problems.
Are there any other comments? I'll entertain a motion which could, well, if we do a motion, it sounds like it would be one without the sole source or we can decide not to vote at all and follow Mr. Zimmerman's suggestion. Is there a motion? Anybody who wants to vote on this one?
Mr. Harvey? I have a motion to move forward without sole source and having that in the sole source process for additional information.
Second.
Okay. All in favor of that motion? Say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstained?
I'm going to abstain.
Two abstentions, both from Virginia. Right. That takes care of this. I would strongly suggest, given the discussion that we had, that when you have some ideas about sole source and the mechanisms that are used, that you do take it to the JCC and you do work with our staffs so that they will feel comfortable with it. I think you've heard a very strong statement about that, and it sounds like Mrs.
Mr. Chairman, I was about to offer that we defer this with some information, and it's not just the sole source information. I think we could be a little bit clearer on all of the processes that we would go through with this item, and that way we would have a lot more information in the larger public as well as for the board to understand how the process will work through. I think we've taken a really good process, and we've sort of missed some of the opportunity to get the clarity so that we can all feel comfortable. I'm comfortable that it probably can work, and I think the sole source has raised the greatest amount, but I think we can just come back with a better document, and I hope that we can come back before this is brought to the board in order to have that kind of information. It will flush out any questions that
Within that light, Mr. Chairman, between now and the end of June board meeting, we will be have a meeting with the JCC, which will lay out the specific nature of our processes and controls, so that they can have time to review that, and then we can also provide any other information on sole source, so that when it gets to the board at the end of the June, you will have that information.
I'm a little bit nervous about the sole source part. I am concerned about where we are relative to the plan of contracts, and if we approve the budget with a plan of contracts and we don't have a Virginia vote that supports the change in the procurements, have we done anything? Or maybe we approve it and you eventually catch up with the procurement process? I'm not quite sure what happens there. Can you clarify how those are tied together?
Are you saying that if the board does not approve the plan of contracts by the end of June?
Well, at this point, we do not have a Virginia vote for the plan of contracts.
But you don't need
that. The procurement, I'm sorry. The procurement stuff that implements.
You can do it.
Yeah.
Okay. And,
I think
but I'm not sure I want to try and do the sole source in 2 weeks, because I think the board needs to discuss it as well and have a chance at the board meeting. Can we do everything except the sole source within the 2 weeks and allow people in Virginia to feel more comfortable?
May I just make a recommendation? My comment about the JCC was that we would actually lay out the actual sole source process as well for the JCC's view as well as for your information. And we can do that in the next week or so.
Okay, and you'll have that early enough that the JCC can take all of that information and feed it back to the board?
Yes, yes. Well, we'll have it early enough for your review as well as for the members a week before the board meeting.
You're asking the JCC for special consideration or special meeting.
So let me suggest that cover everything except sole source. Let's bring sole source back and make sure that the JCC and the board feel comfortable with that. That would, if we now approve the budget with the plan of contracts, will everything work?
Yes.
And is there any concern about approving the budget with a plan of contracts on the part of the board?
Well, I think we've kind of missed that with the last vote.
Well, they can have the plan of contracts. It's not clear to me exactly how they implement all of it.
That's it.
Let me just make this comment. If the board does not approve the plan of contracts at the end of June, we would still be able to operate.
Sure.
If that's what your question is, yes, because primarily most of the plan of contracts we already actually have approval for under the existing guidelines. So we would be able to still operate as a going concern. And if there was any exposure, we would bring it to the July 9th FAO committee meeting, and we would be able to move along on that basis. But I don't think there's any exposure.
Okay. So may I have a motion to approve the fiscal 2010 budget as it's presented to us? Motion and a second. Any other comment? Mr. Zimmerman. I'm sorry, am I seeking
guidance?
Yes.
In my dates?
All that stuff.
If the committee wishes to, if the committee, you're talking about the September date and the December date and the January date.
That's a very good, we have it all recorded, your first date.
Yes.
Okay. Does the committee wish to have that included as part of this approval?
Guidelines, yes.
So then I'll entertain a motion that also includes those three dates that we very specifically articulated. And does the motion that was just made include that? Is that?
Yeah.
Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Do we have an abstention on this one? Okay. We have completed those action items. We have one more. This is the review of metro access cost, ridership cost and policy, and an action item on extending contract authority.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Before I begin, I would like to make a couple of introductory comments on this presentation. First, I just want to underscore that the material in this presentation was presented to the JCC on their meeting on May 29th. And I would like to thank the JCC for the very substantive input that they gave me, as they always do. So just want to acknowledge that and thank you for that. Today's presentation has three components. I'm going to attempt to go through these as promptly as I can. But the three are, first, a response to questions that were raised by this committee last month pertaining to the growth of ridership and cost of the Metro Access Paratransit service, where it comes from, what the causes are. And I would add that as I present this material that I'm going to talk about and what we're doing about it, and also, frankly, options that the board could consider from a policy standpoint to address the increasing demand. The second component is a more detailed treatment of the APTA peer review. And I heard very clearly from board members last time that there was a desire for data. This presentation has quite a bit of data. So we'll be going through that and certainly entertain your questions. And then the last component pertains to the contracting authority. As you may recall, we previously added $6.5 million of contracting authority to take us to the end of the current fiscal year. The burn rate of dollars on the paratransit contract is considerably higher than it had been anticipated when the agreement, when the contract was awarded in September of 2005. And so this action today extends the contracting authority and adjusts the amount of the contracting authority to our current consumption rate, taking us through the end of fiscal 2011.
Mr. Graham.
I just thank you very much, Mr. Kent. And I think this is very important, and I'm prepared to spend the time on this. But your PowerPoint presentation is 26 pages. And I would like to suggest, unless there's objection, that you focus specifically into the issues raised at the last meeting. There's a few pages on background and all of that.
Okay.
We can just kind of cut to the quick. And then if I don't know whether you want to permit questions as we go along, whether that helps, or whether we should hold all of our questions and comments until we finish what hopefully you can do in 10 to 15 minutes. Otherwise, we're running out of time.
There are two aspects, as I understand it, to this presentation. One is a very specific request for an increase in contract authority, which carries us through next year. And the second is a set of policy issues, which are difficult policy issues, ones that we have in one way or another discussed before, in which if we take them on now, we'll probably result in extensive discussion and a fair amount of time spent. So I leave it to the committee as to whether they wish to just do the contract adjustment and give the contract authority, or whether we want to take on these policy issues at this point. At some point, we probably are going to have to deal with these policy issues. The question is this the time?
Well, but we had specific questions, Mr. Chairman, from the last session.
Right, we did.
I think there's a way to do this very expeditious. For example, I'd like to know, there's information here about other jurisdictions and what's happening. I mean, those types of things should be covered. I'm just trying to get this as condensed as possible.
I think your problem... Go ahead, Mr.
I'm in agreement with that. I think, can we dispense of the contractual piece first? Can we do that, move that forward, and then try to streamline the presentation, as Mr. Graham is suggesting, in response to some specific questions that were asked before? And then, if we need additional time, do that another meeting.
Can we reverse what you've just said?
Well, I think we probably can go ahead and do the contractual item right away. Is there anybody? What page do you actually have?
That would be page 20. Well, actually, my numbers are different. It's right. at the very end, back up three slides.
It's 94.
Okay. The paratransit contract status is the title.
It's 94.
Yeah.
Well, this has
slide 25.
This action will go to the board anyway, didn't it?
Right.
This is just our first bite at this.
Okay. Do you want to say anything to this?
Can we speak to it?
Absolutely. Well, I can give a very quick treatment of what we're asking for and how the dollars are being allocated. As I mentioned, the current contracting authority expires on June 30th, and what we are requesting for fiscal 10 is $90 million in contracting authority and $100 million in FY 2011, reflecting the current growth pattern.
And the $90 million is in the existing budget, or a budget that we are about to approve and that we just sent to the board, is that right?
I'm going to ask.
Yes, it is.
The CFO respond to that.
Mm-hmm. The full amount, yes.
Mr. Graham, are you uncomfortable with proceeding with this without the answers to your questions?
For 10.
For 10, but not for 11.
Right.
Okay. If we get the answers to your questions, would you be comfortable with 12
or with 11? I think it's... I'd rather have the horse in front of the cart here. And let me have the examination of some of these issues in action. Go to the 11.
Okay. Mr. Orton, you have a comment?
Yes, ma'am. Well, in deference to time, then, if we could go back to the beginning and advance to, I'd like to go actually to slide 6.
Which number is that for?
This is for you. This would be.
What's this one?
The graph on ridership and cost per trip. What you have seen previously, and actually maybe I can back up one just before that. The slide on ridership and budget growth, you've seen this graph before, but we did go back and add the projection for FY11. So this is a mapping of the ridership trend against the budget. And then following that, on the next page, what we're seeing here is that the cost per trip has been relatively static over the last several years, certainly during the current contract. And if you were to adjust for inflation, actually the cost per trip is slightly decreasing. We find this to be a very important piece for us to look at, because the concern was, where is the cost coming from? What's driving the cost? And when we see a consistent cost per trip, it very clearly points to ridership being the cost driver, as opposed to any loss of efficiency or other infrastructure pieces. On the next page, we begin a discussion of where the growth is coming from. And, this was a comment I made recently, that it's not that people are using Metro Access more. It's that more people are using Metro Access. And so what you can see on these two graphs, the one on the right shows that it's actually the number of registrants that are increasing over these last 4 years that has contributed the greatest. And, of course, you can see that that those trends are with the District of Columbia, Prince George's County, and Montgomery County in that order. As compared with the increases in ridership on the left side, and again, it's primarily those same jurisdictions. But the important piece here is that it is the actual increase in the number of people who are using the service that's producing the greater ridership and ergo the increased cost. Now, we highlight on the next page as we go through each jurisdiction individually. We're just kind of pointing out some factors that we think contribute. The District of Columbia has shown over these 4 years the largest increase in enrollment in the service. And one factor, I want to be clear that we're not saying that the Medicaid issue is the only factor that affects it, but it's a contributor, just as the case is with the other jurisdictions, that changes in some other social organizations and programs that serve people with disabilities can result in people coming onto Metro Access. Within the district also, it is the second largest increase in passenger trips, but the one advantage that the district does have is that because of the density of available fixed route services, that is one factor that over time, as we start to leverage and promote the free ride program even more, which I'm going to tell you later that it's going extremely well, but we're going to continue to promote that, that really is the long-term answer to try and blunt the growth curve. In Maryland, Prince George's County clearly is the largest user of the service, and the second largest increase in enrollment also comes from Prince George's County. And of course, as we've mentioned previously, there is a relationship between available alternate services for customers and the prevalence of their use of Metro Access. In Montgomery County, it's slightly less demand for the service, and we believe that that's largely because of the pervasive availability of fixed route service on Montgomery County Ride-On. But even with that, that really is the alternative, really to speak of. That even with that option, Montgomery County is still third in third place in terms of growth of registrants and ridership. In Virginia historically been the smallest market share of the service, and in Virginia there is greater use of alternate services. But as you can see here in Fairfax County, there was still an 86% increase in enrollment over these same 4 years and an 89% increase in rides in Arlington. And again, the same thing applies to all the jurisdictions, that as they make decisions about funding their programs, there is a correlation on the impact that it can have on the use of Metro Access.
Why is Virginia?
Well, again, I have to say that there is a much greater use of the other services, and so it does. There's less dependency on Metro Access because people have had more alternatives. There are more programs that serve the same population than in other jurisdictions. Now, regionally, we did put
cost to somewhere else. There's an additional cost somewhere else.
Not to anybody else, but somewhere else.
Yes. Well, right. So there's so that demand is being met somewhere else. That's correct. That's correct. Now, regionally, we provided some figures from the U.S. Census. That this is basically showing you that as the baby boomer population ages, that it's moving into a category where statistically, as people exceed the age of 65, the prevalence of disability among that segment of the population is more than twice as high as those aged 21 through 64. And so this is a factor just within the Metro Compact area, but it mirrors the national trend on the direction the population is going, and this is a major source of the increased demand for the service. Now, this one is, again, when we pointed out that the cost per trip has been consistent, we've also seen some consistency in the number of trips per registrant. It has dropped a little, but this is not a really major change. And what that really says, again, is that it's not so much that each customer is using the service more. It's just that we have many more customers. Now, what we have done is we've been asked a few times to give you some comparison to other transit systems, just to kind of show where we are. And so this chart shows the 2008 ridership, the budget, with the exception of us, where I put actual in there for Metro, and the cost per trip. And you can see clearly from these systems that Metro is actually kind of in the middle. The cost per trip is comparable and even better than some of the other major metropolitan areas that are providing extensive paratransit service. So this is just really to show, you know, certainly the direction that the budgets have taken. Our paratransit budget is about 5% of the total operating budget here. In New York, it's more than 10%. You know, so it really, we can show here that even though we're a smaller order of magnitude, that there really are some efficiencies that are inherent in the way our system is set up, which is something we don't often talk about. But that's a comparable cost per trip, certainly with regard to Los Angeles and Boston.
Mr. Graham.
But just pause here, because there's something very stunning here to my mind. Our general manager knows all about Los Angeles. Here we are. Los Angeles has how many people? And yet, you know, our ridership is almost identical to L.A. You know, I mean, 200,000. And yet we're so much smaller by any, you know, measure.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this suggests to me, this is one of the areas in this, and I reviewed this before. One of the areas in this that really suggests what's going on here, and cost is a separate factor, cost per trip, where you know, we certainly would want to ask ourselves, why is New York what it is, and what is that also isn't making sense. But I think the ridership, just the pure size of the ridership.
Mr. Graham.
And the assumption that L.A. has a community of people living with disabilities, which is comparable, they just somehow or another haven't missed people living with disabilities. I don't know how to.
Mr. Graham, basically, you can do the same observation relative to New York. You know, we're probably at 40% of the ridership of New York, and certainly New York's population is on the range of five or six times where we are. The problem is that the issue you were bringing up gets us into that second discussion. It really does relate to the policies that we make relative to who is eligible and for what trip. And so if you want to pursue that, we do get into that issue that we may or may not want to pursue. Mr. Zimmerman.
That's a question, because I think this is a really interesting point, but I don't know what we can tell. The ridership, when it says WMATA, that means within the WMATA area, or that means administered by WMATA?
That's within our area and administered by us. That's the compact area that we serve.
Is it only that which you're responsible for, or is it everything that's being done for paratransit in that area? Does it include STAR? Does it include what's
going on? No, those are only our numbers.
Right. So I don't even know how to compare area, because we have large numbers of these trips that aren't on that table or in this area. And I don't know anything at all, of course, about L.A., whether they have others. So it's a really interesting question, and the point may be valid. But it's hard to know, because we don't have all the parity. We're not comparing anything. The one line I know about is Washington, you know, this area. And I know that's not all our trips, because, you know, in my jurisdiction, it's mostly not your service. It's another service. In Fairfax, it's mostly another service. So it might actually turn out that your point is even more true. But we don't know based on this table.
Well, that's some of the reason why we provided the population data, because the fact is that for all of these systems, the transit agency is not the sole provider of this type of service. In the Washington area, we're about 30% of the market share. I would say, though, that as far as why it is that it seems like we have a disproportionately larger number of customers for our population than in some of the other areas is because of the unique characteristics of Washington, that this is where the disability law is created, this is where employment opportunities are, this is the most accessible transit system, I would say, arguably, in the country, and people know that if they come and locate in this community, that they're going to have access to services and transportation that are going to meet their special needs.
Hypothesis to explain the fact that you actually haven't yet demonstrated. It might be true, but I think we need to see some other data to know if that's good, even know if that explanation is
saying that there are more people living with disabilities here.
Again, an interesting hypothesis, which might be true.
Okay. Well, perhaps maybe what I can do in moving ahead is to talk about really what we're doing about it, and I think that's really what everyone wants to know. The free ride program for fiscal year 09 through April has already yielded a cost avoidance of $14 million. These are current Metro Access customers who are using bus and rail free of charge as a result of that program, and these are dollars that otherwise would have been on the paratransit operating line item. So this is a greatly successful program, and we're projecting that we may avoid as much as $17 million by the end of this month. And we're promoting the program through the methods that we placed up here.
Ms. Hewlett?
Yeah, I had a question too. You know, I guess I'm dabbling into the other area as well, but part of it was eligibility certification up until 2005. There was a very low denial rate, less than 1%. And what about post-2005?
Still the same. That's the reason why we are now pursuing the discussion of conditional eligibility, which is a process that we're preparing for that starts with vetting with the community through our advisory committee.
Mr. Graham.
How many people are enrolled in our free ride program?
They don't have to have specific enrollment as long as they're an eligible Metro Access customer.
We've sent
many times.
Card to everyone?
Well, they don't need the card. What they do is they present their ID. And if they get on a bus, the bus driver presses a key on the fare box, and that's how we register that usage. And on rail, the station manager has a smart card that they swipe to let the customer through, and that's how we're tallying rail.
And that's a little bit of an incumbent person living with this. You can't just simply go through. You have to present themselves.
And the purpose is, of course, just because of the fact that we want to make sure the customer who is eligible uses it. I wanted to also offer this, that we talked about the cost of the program. This is a description of how those dollars are being used currently in the operation. The March data shows 191,000 passengers transported. March is usually our highest month, but in April we went to almost over 197,000 customers. So you can see that we're rapidly approaching a 2 million passenger mark for FY09 while still maintaining our on-time performance standard. We've sustained reductions in our vehicle collisions and passenger injury rate. We have been working on right-sizing and reducing the fleet age. And also, we've been doing things to improve our efficiency, like the door-to-door service, where we no longer passively wait for a customer to board. And the Easy Pay prepayment option also helps to expedite boarding and moving on with the service because the driver does not have to handle the fare for those customers. So those are programs that we're promoting.
Mr. Graham.
191,000 passengers transported?
Yes, for 1 month.
1 month?
Yes, sir.
And this is, you've said this is 30% of the market share?
Yes, that's estimated,
well,
yes.
Just to follow up on what you said, Mr. Zimmerman, is that, you know, as a first step, as a next step, one next step is for us to better understand where the other 70% of the market share is and how much are those costs? I mean, are these folks in Fairfax, Arlington, are you doing this more efficiently and more economically than we are? I ask that as a question that needs an answer. I don't know.
Well, I mean, obviously there's some differences between them because since we are the designated coordinated transportation provider for the region and we have the ADA regulations we have to comply with, and our infrastructure includes the oversight apparatus, the call center, and whatever other resources are necessary to make sure that as we put the service out that it's compliant. So we have certain constraints on the service we deliver that the other providers might not have.
We have one big constraint, which is that WMATA is obliged to provide the trip. No one else is. Our supplement, which means that all the worst trips, the longest, most expensive ones, are called WMATA. Mm-hmm. So that is part of what's happening. We can run a very efficient service within our county, and we do. Mm-hmm. And people like our service, and generally prefer it. We choose it voluntarily on the Metro Access. But we're not providing the long trip. They pick that up, and that's the more expensive thing. Mm-hmm. They're all expensive. The long trip.
You know how much your service costs. Mm-hmm. You know how many people are using it.
Mm-hmm.
That type of data, I think that would be instructive.
The other part, Mr. Graham, which is also very important, is we are not allowed to deny trips. Everybody else can.
That's
not only deny distance, but we've got to have the capacity to hit all the peaks. So we've got to have that capacity sitting there while everybody else can say, oops, we're up to capacity, go call Metro.
And in
so
fact,
we're always going to be more expensive.
And that has happened.
Oh, yeah.
That has happened. I mean, and it fluctuates, and when the program's budgets change too.
30% of the market.
Well, when you say 30% of market share, are you including the automobile in the market?
I was speaking of providers of specialized transportation service.
Okay, so you're
including the answer is no.
All the specialized transportation that Medicaid might provide in some areas, and the people who are going for special medical trips.
I was assuming our market share was much, much greater than that.
Yeah.
And that's why the number just kind of
blew. We're the largest provider, but there are other services.
Single provider.
Correct.
But there's obviously 70% of the people who need this service are going somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
It's still going to cost us $90 million.
And see, the whole point of this was, this is why we are repeatedly encouraged by the federal government to do what they call human services coordination. Because if all of the providers were pooling their resources, there would be some efficiency gains. There is a coordinated plan for the region that COG helped put together, but it's a plan, and it needs to be implemented.
Let me stop this discussion at this point, because we are at the policy issues, and there are a bunch of them. They have to do with coordination with other agencies. They have to do with the rules that we have relative to other rules. They have to do with shedding service, all of those policy issues. I'm more than happy to proceed with that discussion if that's what we want to do. I would suggest, however, that at this point, all of the technical information and the things that Mr. Graham has requested have been presented, and that we should go ahead and at least consider the request for the contract authority. And then if we want to come back and do policy for as long as we wish, that's fine. That's up to the committee. Mr. Graham.
You know, someone suggested to me the other day, and it struck me, they said, why don't you just simply, for a certain class of your customer, Metro Access customer, why don't you issue taxicab? And for people who don't need the mechanics of a particular lift or anything else, just simply, be far more convenient, obviously, than bus service. I mean, have we ever looked at that issue of...
Mr. Graham, you're starting to get into those policy issues and stuff we've done. Mr. Cato?
There's two components of it. One, we do use taxi cabs as part of the Metro Access services, and I'm aware of several jurisdictions that started off to do exactly what you said, and the cost is... went so high they had to back away from it.
Is that right?
Yes. Because the number of trips multiplied by several factors. And just because people could call a taxi and use it where they wanted to, and that number just went up, and the cost just exceeded anyone's projections, and it was pulled back.
I'd like to ask for a motion on the specific request for the contract authority, and then if we want to go and have this discussion endlessly, we can have it, because it's a long discussion.
Well, but that's what today was supposed to be about. It just happens that we had other pressing business, but I know the 10 has already been debated, it's in the budget, but I'm very uncomfortable agreeing to an 11 without having this discussion, without figuring out how we can address this issue. That was the whole point of today.
If you want to open up the policy discussion,
well,
I think it's fine.
I just can't support an 11 contract authority without us
I hear you, Mr. Graham. Does the committee wish to vote on 10, 11, or go ahead and have a policy discussion?
I think we'd go okay with 10.
Okay. I want to hear where everybody else is.
I'm finding out how we're going to make a policy discussion in the day that's going to impact on changing what the budget that's being presented to us by the staff. I don't see where a policy discussion is going to end up with a decision being made that's going to change the budget that's being presented to us that needs to be amended to our existing case. And that's why I didn't understand why we couldn't separate the two. Because I think the policy discussion is going to require both more deliberation and decision, and if you're going to impact the cost of the service, it's going to be it's going to require more than just a big session to do so.
Okay. Can I have a motion for either 10 or 10 and 11?
Chairman, I will move. Haven't we already approved 10? I mean, it's in the budget.
10 and 11 is subject to funding. I mean, that's what the language would be. So it's not an obligation. It's just only contracting authority.
This is contract authority within the budget, and it allows the contract to be expanded beyond the level where it is today. And other than that, we're not doing an approval. Ms. Hudgens.
I'd like to move the item as recommended with the two. And with the clarity, as we all know, that it is subject. Because I really do think that what this is going to do for us is move forward with the contract as it is, recognizing some of the advantages and positive things that have come forward. And if we want to have this discussion, I think we really need to set aside some time and ask for additional data to have a thorough discussion. Because the perception is that there is a more efficient way and a more cost-efficient, effective way to do this. We need to be able to look at all the data to determine that. But what's before us is something that is critical to moving forward with the system and the service that we're providing now. And it is subject to approval, and I think that we can all, before we get to a 2011 budget, we have a lot that we can do in the discussion of the policy if we want to affect that part. My motion is to move on.
Okay, is there a second to the motion?
Second.
We have a motion and a second. The motion was Ms. Hudgens and the second was Mr. McKay. Comment, Mr. Graham.
Yeah, I think that what motivated me at the last meeting was to attempt to have a really good discussion of these issues, see if we couldn't get a handle escalating costs while at the same time providing quality services living with disabilities. That was the point of it. Now, if I don't want to lose sight of that commitment, because having wrestled with this issue in the 11 years I've been on this board, it always gets put off, there's never enough time, and it's a very delicate and sensitive issue to begin with. And so there's maybe a natural inclination of not wanting to confront it. But I think we should confront it. And so if this motion contemplates setting another time, when we have the time to really go through this insofar as the 11 commitment, then I'll support it. But if that isn't inherent in this, I'm very troubled by it.
Well, Mr. Graham, let me note that this year, the size of the increase in subsidy that the state of Maryland is providing for fiscal 2010 is equal to the increase in its subsidy for Metro Access. So essentially 100% of the increase is for Metro Access, and everything else is constant. So we are most concerned about the policy issues. And we realize that in 2011, it will be a bigger issue than it was in 2010. So we certainly endorse what you're saying, that we need to look at this. We need to look at this in a very thoughtful fashion. And we need to balance all the various forces that are playing upon us on this issue. And they are, as staff characterizes, broad policy issues that require board consideration and decision.
So can we ask that Mr. Ken come back to us with better description of the other 70% of this contract?
Certainly should be part of whatever he brings back to us. That That set aside as an issue that not only do we want to deal with, but I think we have no choice but to deal with in the context of next year's budget. Can I have a vote on the motion as it was proposed? All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? There are none opposed. The motion is passed, subject to budget authority being available. At this point, I presume nobody wants to proceed with any policy discussion, so we will move on to our one information item, which is our financial report.
I'll be very brief. I'll draw your attention in your packages to page 101, 102. Page 101 is the new dashboard-style report that tries to summarize in an executive session or executive report the key issues for the month. Page 102 is where the high-level numbers are. Draw your attention right to the middle of the page. Year-to-date total ridership through 10 months of this fiscal year. Metro rail ridership is up 4% over last year's actual. Metro bus is up 1% over last year's actual. And as we've mentioned, Metro Access is growing at about 22%. The bottom of page 102 is a look at the operating budget from a financial standpoint. The number in the bottom right-hand corner shows we have a year-to-date subsidy surplus of $12.4 million, which is consistent with the trends we've been seeing all year, and it's putting us on a glide path to ending the year with a surplus at that line item, which we'd use to replenish the operating reserve.
Very good. And may I note again that, once again, although the annual Metro bus number for ridership seems to be following very reasonably, the monthly number is at a variance with the revenue number, and that we are not getting things that relate, and we're continuing to work on why that is. I wonder how many months we're going to have this discussion.
Actually, I think it will finalize itself by next month, since we had some revenue differences between capturing ridership and revenue by month. So if you looked at the last quarter and you looked at the revenue and the ridership, they were always in opposition.
Yes.
But if you average it out, it would be pretty much in line with what it should be.
Right.
But that's
which,
our account.
Which is the observation you make when you just look at these numbers.
I realize.
The question is why on a monthly basis is it reversed on itself. Okay. Are there any other items to come before us? If not, without objection, this meeting is adjourned.